There we go.
Yeah. Okay. Then we shall continue. Thank you. Without any further ado, the much anticipated item number 7. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Region of Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider waiver of waste discharge requirement order number R1-2010-0029 for non-point source discharges related to certain federal land management activities on U.S. Forest Service lands in the North Coast Region. This item has been properly noticed, and a sheet explaining the procedures for this hearing is available at the handout table. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth in this matter? Great, thank you. Let's start the staff presentation.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name's Robert Clapt. I'm the chief of the Timber Harvest and Non-Point Source Division for the Regional Water Board. I'd like to start by entering the file into the record. This has been a long time coming today. So I'd like to enter the file into the record, which includes two late comments and our response to comments addendum number 1, which you should have separately. So we're here today to consider a waiver of waste discharge requirements for the Forest Service covering activities associated with non-point source discharges on national forest lands. What I'd like to do is go through a brief chronology of how we got here today, then give you a real quick overview of the coverage. I gave you quite a detailed presentation at our workshop in March. Briefly go over the waiver conditions, and then get into the comments that we received, our response to those, and how we've addressed them, how the waiver has been modified. And I'll have some errata that we can throw up at the end of my presentation to show you some changes that we've made this morning. Okay. So, chronology. Recall that we had a workshop the 25th of March in Eureka, and preparatory to that, we put out a draft proposed waiver, kind of an early review opportunity. We had some comments at that workshop, notably from the Forest Service, Mr. Felice Pace, and board members. So we made some modifications to the waiver, got that together along with a CEQA initial study, mitigated negative declaration, and pulled the whole package together out for public release through the clearinghouse on April 13th for a 30-day comment period that ended on May 17th. In addition to going out to clearinghouse, we sent out copies on email and made email notifications of the package. It was also posted on our website. Then we received comments from May 14th. We got the first comment, the last comment on June 1st. So there were two comments that came in after the close of the comment period, which we've gone ahead and considered and responded to. So after receiving comments, pulled together a response to comments, made additional modifications to the waiver, and posted the whole package on the website on June 1st. So we posted the modified waiver, the comments, and response to comments preparatory for today. And unfortunately, we don't have the nice map, but you saw one from Ben Zabinski that was quite similar, showing the extent of U.S. Forest Service land within Region 1. About 55% of the region is in national forest and would be covered under this waiver. Again, we're talking expansion of an existing waiver, which was for timber harvest and vegetation management only, into activities associated with non-point source. Such as timber harvesting, going beyond that, then into roads, grazing, recreation, vegetation management, restoration, fire suppression, and post-fire rehabilitation. I did have a graphic that kind of helped explain how the Forest Service process works. The waiver is based in large part upon existing guidelines and standards. and protocols that the Forest Service uses, starting with a base for most of the forests in our region in the Northwest Forest Plan, then each individual forest having its own land and resource management plan crafted through guidance from the Northwest Forest Plan and other Forest Service guidance, leading on up through watershed assessment, watershed restoration, identifying projects based on those watershed assessments, then developing best management practices to protect water quality during the conduct of activities and those projects. We've added some pieces into the process requiring that the actual on-the-ground prescriptions to meet the BMPs be placed in the environmental documents and also into the contracts. And we're working with Forest Service to see exactly how to do that, how to get that language into their contracts without creating an additional administrative procedure. And then finally, we've also added an implementation checklist approach so that at the end of a project manager goes through the project with a checklist of all those on-the-ground prescriptions, checking them off to make sure everything was implemented appropriately and is working. So we have opportunity through that whole process of this, you know, broader land and resource management plans from the forests on into actual watershed assessment and then development of individual projects all the way in through project completion and implementation of BMP. So we have opportunity through that whole process for review, inspections, review of checklists. Also, I need to mention that those I've talked about projects, but the guidance and standards that Forest Service has also directs their day-to-day activities. The waiver consists of a set of general conditions and then a couple of categories based on risk. Oh, there's the map. I think that kind of tells the story just all by itself. Set of conditions in the waiver, and just briefly, again, requiring compliance with their own guidance and standards, which includes more specificity in the BMPs and the actual on-the-ground prescriptions. The waiver also includes an application and enrollment process whereby individual projects are applied under either the low-risk category A, which actually doesn't require application, but category B, which moderate-risk projects require application. We review the application. Actually, we will have had influence in the project prior to the application actually coming to us. Through the normal Forest Service scoping and review process. Then we enroll projects, and that includes grazing permits. Also included in the waiver are the processes of watershed inventories and assessments and restoration plans. And it's here where we talk about inventorying legacy sites, so legacy sediment sites that are on the landscape, getting those into a priority system and scheduling them to be addressed. Then there's a monitoring program to monitor implementation and effectiveness, and again, that on-the-ground checklist, as well as in-stream conditions, both from a broad landscape perspective as well as a project perspective. And I'll talk about that in quite a bit more detail when we get into the comments. Also, there's conflict resolution pieces scattered throughout the waiver where if we run into disagreements, there's opportunity for us to discuss those with the Forest Service. There's also a condition for annual meetings with the Forest Service for each forest to discuss how things are going and resolve any conflicts at that point. Oh, not again. There we go. For now. Okay, I'm just getting a little nervous about this. So we received 8 comment letters from a smattering of groups. As one would expect, we received a comment letter from the Forest Service. The tribes, Klamath Forest Alliance and Environmental Protection Information Center, Forest Issues Group, and this was an interesting one. They are one of the stakeholders in the statewide process and asked if it was okay if they commented on our waiver. I said, well, sure, send them on. And then a letter from the California Cattlemen's Association, California Farm Bureau Federation, and the California Forestry Association all together in one letter. And the last two were late comments, California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, and an addendum to the Klamath Forest Alliance and Environmental Protection Information Center. Again, you have those comments, and you have our response to those comments. Most of the comments were generally supportive of the framework. Most asked for more specificity regarding coverage and monitoring. What I'd like to do is run through the basic categories of comments that we got and how we address them. A lot of comment about fire suppression and post-fire response, most of this having to do with concerns about field decisions during the actual firefighting, and then after firefighting, the post-fire response. How were the impacts created during the firefighting addressed as the equipment and personnel moved out? One thing that we've added to the waiver in response to that is requiring a review of those procedures through that statewide process where Forest Service BMPs and Water Quality Management Plan are being reviewed on a statewide basis. So on the list of things to review in that process is the fire suppression activities as well as the burned area emergency response procedures. So we've asked, actually required in the waiver that occur, and then any changes be made accordingly. Also, we're increasing Water Board staff involvement in that post-fire response. We had an opportunity last year. The regional hydrologist, Barry Hill, was able to set up a process where we could be involved in the burned area emergency response so that we could have an actual field person out in the field providing that water quality perspective during some of these post-fire activities. We'll be involved in that again this year, so we'll have some folks out on the ground during that. Comments on roads management. One suggestion to reduce the road density to what can be inspected annually. Right now, the Forest Service does not have the resources to inspect all of its roads in a year. So a suggestion was made to reduce the road density. I know that I'll get into that in a minute, and also to improve road maintenance. But the Forest Service does have a road management planning process. We, to this point, haven't been involved to a great deal in that. We certainly need to be more involved in that. Then also the idea that I explained a little while ago about watershed assessment inventories, coming up with priority lists and having those priority lists really addresses the road issues as well. Fixes or problems identified can include the need to decommission roads. So those can be on the list of priorities. Requirement to annually review those with the Forest Service, keep that process alive and moving. There were concerns and questions expressed about, well, what's good progress? How do you know, how much progress is being made and how much is enough? Difficult question to answer, but we have at least set up a process whereby the inventories will be done, be looking at priorities and be reviewing that with the Forest Service on a routine basis, an ongoing program. Also, that program sets up the Forest Service for responding to funding opportunities if they occur. For instance, in the rare occurrence of an additional allocation or appropriation of money, the Forest Service would be set up to apply those funds to the highest priority issues in the watershed. Likewise, if grant funding becomes available, then they're poised to take advantage of that. Also, in the monitoring plan, there is a requirement to inspect roads after major storms, and we've had some comment on that and how that might be improved. We will be fine-tuning that monitoring plan. I'll get into that in a little bit, and we'll certainly include consideration of those comments and those suggestions when we do fine-tune that monitoring plan. Concerns about riparian areas, riparian area protections. Grazing impacts, vegetation management, unstable areas, those kinds of things were brought up in comments. The waiver does include a requirement for shade retention to address temperature, also a requirement that the Forest Service comply with its aquatic conservation strategy, which has a number of goals relating back to beyond shade, to diversity in the riparian zone, riparian function overall, to maintain and improve aquatic conditions. Again, we are set up for project review, including a review of grazing allotments. We have that opportunity as well. Within that, we can address unstable areas, you know, review projects with regard to that, both in the riparian zone and up on the hill slope. And there is riparian zone monitoring included in the monitoring program. Another group of comments had to do with compliance, enforcement, kind of transparency issues. Most had to do with, well, how do we determine compliance? I can't tell by looking at your waiver whether or not, you know, you can tell if the Forest Service is complying. There need to be some more specific triggers in there. And what are the consequences of a violation? Suffice to say that we can't include every trigger in the waiver, and we certainly rely upon the basin plan, the water quality objectives that are in that basin plan. There are waiver conditions as well. A lot of them have to do with process. Some are more specific in terms of what actually needs to be done on the ground. And then, obviously, the requirement for the Forest Service to comply with their standards, which through the 208 and the B&B program are protective of water quality. They're currently being reviewed on a statewide level, as I mentioned earlier, and any modifications to those will be automatically included into the waiver. Again, through our review, we would determine compliance through review of projects, actual on-the-ground inspections, the Forest Service reporting back to us. We have a progressive enforcement process that we use when we do run into violations, into problems. There has been concern expressed about inserting ourselves into the grazing allotments and the issues associated with grazing. We would follow the process that we've followed all along with regard to non-point source, and that is to first work collaboratively with folks, work with the Forest Service, determine, you know, if there are problems, what can be done about those. Enforcement, quite honestly, is the last resort. Obviously, we're going for compliance and compliance assistance. That's really the approach we like to take. And then to address some of the concerns and considerations about transparency and how do others know really what's going on, we're going to look into web postings, maybe create an actual web page to post some of this information on so that folks know what's going on, what's being reviewed, and what kinds of things are being rolled under the waiver. Those considerations kind of tie in with the legacy site remediation and restoration. Again, how do you define progress? It's not specifically defined in the waiver. You know, so many sites per year. Also suggestions with regard to funding. There's a recognition that there isn't funding enough to do everything. So a suggestion that maybe project funding can be used to address some of these problems within projects. And, of course, a recommendation to increase funding. I wish we could. I think, again, having the Forest Service set up with plans, their inventories really puts them in a position as funding opportunities become available to take advantage of those. Again, the annual reporting and review of plans will make this process kind of a living process. In addition, there's a requirement for projects that occur in watersheds that do not have an inventory. The inventory needs to be done within the project area, and then those problems prioritized and addressed within the project area. So some project funds obviously will go towards fixing legacy sites within project areas. The hope in the long term is that there will be a watershed approach to all of this, so that all the watersheds will have assessments and inventories, and this will be kind of an ongoing process. I'm out of order here. There we go. We had some comments regarding regulatory overlap and jurisdiction. Kind of along the lines of, well, you know, you're telling them to do what they already do, that the Forest Service really should be the sole agency to determine whether or not their contracts and permits are being addressed. And I agree with both of those comments. What the waiver does is essentially put a regulatory framework, an oversight framework, around what the Forest Service is already doing. It adds to that. It requires conditions beyond their guidelines and standards, things that I've mentioned, like having on-the-ground prescriptions within the contracts, that 100% checklist on projects, project-level identification of legacy sites and problems, those kinds of things. And the waiver does recognize the Forest Service as a water quality management agency, but also as a management agency for its own contracts and permits. And when I get into the errata, you'll see that we've added some language that was suggested by the California Farm Bureau Federation and the Cattlemen's Association that clarifies that. Essentially, what we have is a program that the state nonpoint source policy refers to as a third-party program. There's an opportunity within that policy to certify a third-party program as meeting the needs of the nonpoint source policy. And so with the Forest Service guidelines and standards and then the additions that we've made to that, it essentially constitutes that kind of a program. The monitoring and reporting program got a lot of comments, got a lot of detailed comments from the Quartz Valley Indian Reservation, some comments from Mr. Pace and others, mostly along the lines of that's too broad, the BMP evaluation is too broad, the in-channel monitoring, you know, on a landscape basis is too broad to really pick up impacts or effects. There needs to be more project-level kind of monitoring, needs to be better monitoring of grazing allotments, and especially in riparian zones. There was a suggestion for independent monitoring or independent auditing. That's certainly something we can discuss with the Forest Service. Again, that comes down to a matter of funding, I'm sure. So we do have in the waiver, attached to the waiver, there is a monitoring and reporting program for consideration of adoption today. It is a comprehensive program, but it has some details that need to be worked out. So there's a paragraph in that monitoring and reporting program that says the Regional Water Board and U.S. Forest Service need to work out those details and do it by the 30th of November this year, or before any monitoring is done, whichever is first. So there is a requirement to do that. I need to let you know we have really good agreement on the basic approach with Forest Service. We're real close to having the sampling design pulled together. So by November 30th, we'll be fine-tuning that. We'll have that ready for executive officer approval. We will consider the comments that we've received. We've received, you know, like I said, some pretty good comments. And at the same time, we'd like to provide an opportunity for public input into that process. We recognize that there's expertise out there and there's interest in that monitoring program. So we'll provide that opportunity as well and then have that program modified to include those details by November 30th. So quickly in summary, in terms of changes to the waiver from the March 25th workshop, we've added some specifics and changed language for clarification. We've added in road upgrades, stormproofing, decommissioning, that kind of stuff to add more specificity. We did some editing to clarify how we get from the expression of a BMP as a goal statement to an actual on-the-ground prescription, what will happen on the ground, and then how that gets included in contracts. We've made some language changes with regards to road maintenance under Category A, which is that low-risk category, to better define what fits in that category versus the moderate risk category. We added responsibilities for contractors and permittees, added that condition for the Forest Service to review fire suppression and post-fire protocols. We added a discharge notification and reporting, which is a standard thing in WDRs and waivers. And then, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we've committed to public input in the monitoring and reporting program as we do that fine-tuning. So with that, that concludes my presentation. We do have language changes to the waiver that I think I need to present before we have any other public input. Are there questions at this point?
Nope.
Okay. Got my fingers crossed. Anticipating.
Wait for it. Drum roll.
Wait. Drew is so cool under pressure. I love it. Thank you, Drew. Now, is this going to work? Oh, look at that. If you turn it on, it makes all the difference in the world. Okay, so a number of these changes are just editorial, like here, National Forest Service instead of U.S. Forest Service. These are in the findings.
It's in there.
Anybody getting seasick yet?
He is.
Some editing here regarding permittees to more specifically define grazing permittees and grazing permits. These changes in the numbers here have to do with just editorial changes regarding grazing permittees. They apply to conditions 12 and 22 through 34, so we needed to make those changes. And just a few little edits in there. Getting to some larger language changes. right here. These are worked out with legal staff, with Forest Service and our legal staff to clarify the Forest Service responsibilities, and then further down here, the responsibilities of contractors and grazing permittees. So to basically split those out. Is there anything you wanted to say about this, Samantha?
Yeah, I'll just add. Forest Service wanted clarification. They wanted separate provisions for. They're essentially identical, however. The new provision 12 makes it clear that the contractor and grazing permittee's responsibilities, even though we say BMP manual and mitigation measures, those are all articulated by those on-the-ground prescriptions, so they'll know exactly what it is they're supposed to do, you know, because it doesn't seem fair to say comply with all this stuff and we're not sure what we think it is. So that's the main difference between these two clauses is contractor responsibility is going to be articulated in the contract with on-the-ground prescriptive measures.
And we've added in a sentence here suggested by Farm Bureau Federation, and I believe the Cattlemen's Association also, that the Forest Service does have authority to determine whether or not their contractors and permittees are complying with their contracts or permits.
Yeah, part of the difficulty was, you know, just making sure that we weren't stepping on each other's toes. So we don't really want to be in the business of enforcing Forest Service contracts. And to the extent the waiver is applying straight to a permittee or a contractor, they don't want to be in the business of enforcing our waiver. And so we just wanted to make it really clear, and their legal office is satisfied that these edits will do that. And we agree. You know, we don't want it all blending. And they have their own process. We understand some of it, and some of it we don't. So we wanted to make sure those were separate items.
Can you explain the previous change, which was more significant?
You mean this one?
No, no, no. The numbered conditions are basically the only conditions in the waiver that are applicable to a permittee or a contractor. That's why eight now just only applies to Forest Service in an identical language, but as it applies to contractors and permittees are articulated in number 12.
Okay. We'll jump down to a couple others here. Just clarification here, we're talking about unauthorized discharge of waste in number 38. And I lost my...
Oh, no.
It moves. There we go. Getting a little skittish here.
If I could just follow up, uh-huh. You can go back to that last little edit.
Sure.
So just in keeping with that theme of which provisions apply to which, so this it's a basic boilerplate, so it's Forest Service comply with all these conditions. It accepts number 12 because number 12 is going to apply to contractors and grazing permittees.
Right.
That's why that edit's in there.
Thank you. Here under Category A, I mentioned that we made a modification to clarify what would be low impact and move this piece up so that it was clear that the culvert cleaning and low impact replacement modification or upgrading is outside of the designated riparian zone, that it applies to that culvert cleaning and replacement. Things inside designated riparian zone, those types of activities within the riparian zone, culvert replacement, obviously those are stream crossing kinds of things, and those are Category B, moderate risk activity that would require application and of an actual project design review by us. And just a few edits to make sure that we got the numbers right, reference to numbers, grazing permits. And that was it. I'm sorry?
Provision, general provision
12. General provision 12.
Well,
up in the general.
Yeah.
Right. Right. There's a set of specific conditions specific to category B, and there is a 12 within that as well. This is the 12 right here that applies to the contractors and permittees.
And I'll just say, in case if you lost track, 22 through 34 are just boilerplate prohibitions. So this is really the specific substantive provision for contractors and grazing permittees.
Forgot my pretty picture.
What are you suggesting there, Bob?
Well, I have to confess, this is not in California. But it is on Forest Service land.
Really?
Thanks, Bob.
So that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Any board member questions? No? Okay. Mr. Kelly, did you have anything to add to this? Or I know that before I launch into the speaker cards, you're obviously on behalf of the Forest Service, and you have you're the reincarnated version of Mr. Hill, who had to leave us earlier, so.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I apologize for Mr. Hill. He had to call away there. A family vacation they were planning for months now, so I'll let him go. First, I want to thank you. One of our key strategic objectives for Region 5 is ecological restoration. And within that envelope, the key objective there is to improve and maintain our water resources of California that are on National Forest System land. So this opportunity, we'd like to thank the board for such a great opportunity to have the opportunity to make improvements along those lines. We'd like to note that we also read a lot of the comments as we got them, that they came in, and we thank you for sharing them with us. But it was noted that, the streams on the National Forest are in generally good shape compared to some of the others, and we think we've done a lot to address some of those critical needs and made substantive progress through Northwest Forest Plan, as mentioned before, and looking at how we're going about implementing Northwest Forest Plan, the aquatic conservation and repair and effective monitoring, those kinds of things that we're doing and we will continue to do. But we know that there is room for more improvement out on the ground. And so within that envelope, we see that this is a substantial opportunity to improve our water resources for National Forest System land on the North Coast. The region supports the proposed waiver with the edits that's proposed, brought forward today to the board. And so I would know that staff has worked extremely hard today and even in before today to come to resolution on some key issues and finding the right language and the right balance within the waiver. And also as we continue to work together to continue to find those updates and, like putting together the monitoring plan before November 30th. November 30th. So those are key things that we know will be continuing, and also the key language and changes and improvements that were worked on before and up to today. So we're ecstatic about this opportunity to move forward. The way we extend regulatory coverage to almost all of our activities, that is a change from what we've had in the past, so we're really looking forward to that. It allows for, improvements and changes in our BMPs and provide for restoration of legacy sites, prioritizing those legacy sites so we're getting the worst ones first and providing those opportunities for us to seek the appropriate funding where we can to improve our ability to get to that work and improve the water quality. So those are substantive things that we see as a part of this particular process, the waiver process, should it be approved. would help not only the Forest Service, but to help the water resources of California, as we are a big land management agency, not only here on the North Coast, but also throughout the rest of the state. And we see this as just an opportunity to further that chance to do much better work out on the ground. So we also applaud the opportunities within the waiver to readdress things where we have potential, have conflicts, and constantly update ourselves as new science and technologies come on board, as we learn new things through this process. So that's a huge benefit as well. And so those are the key issues for us, and those key things have basically been resolved, like I say, with the edits and the opportunities to redress anything that we need to update. I think that provides for the perfect framework for us to go forward together, and I want to applaud the staffs for all their hard work and working to the last minute to try to move this forward. So thanks.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of speaker cards here. Felice, followed by Elisa Noble.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Felice Pace for the Environmental Protection Information Center and Klamath Forest Alliance. We've come a really long way with this waiver, and a good way with this waiver. If you think back to where we started way back whenever it was. And I want to commend the staff's work on this and the Forest Service work and thank them for that work. You know, basically what we've done from my perspective, what has happened is we've gone from requiring planning and identification of problems to actually requiring the scheduling of treating those problems. And the distinction that's been made before in areas where we have inventories and where we don't have inventories, that's been major. Requiring that if there's no inventory and plan to address the impairments, that they get addressed as part of the project as environmental mitigation. That's also very good. You know, this getting BMPs into the contracts and plans and EAs is very good, because there's actually was a lawsuit a while back that I was involved in. I think the Klamath Forest Alliance was the lead on that, where we got a court decision that they used to have a list of BMPs, and they put it in an appendix to the EA. And, you know, now what the court decision said and what your plan reflects is that they need to show in the EA where they're going to be applied on the ground and also have an analysis that shows they're going to be effective in mitigating the impacts. So, you know, it assures that the planning has actually gone out and then is – you know, they get implemented. If they're in the contracts, they get implemented through the contracts. So this is very good. And, you know, that's the big challenge with an organization like this, and I think even the Forest Service people would back me up. It's a big, huge organization, and it's sometimes difficult to get from very good – they're very good at planning, but to get to planning to implementation sometimes is a problem. I'm going to hurry up. Not just planning, but scheduling of the treatments. That was a great improvement. We'd like to go even further and ask the Forest Service to commit here to making the budget requests for the priority projects that they identify, not just, you know, having them on the shelf for when stimulus money comes down or whatever, but actually making the budget requests, because that's the way the process works. The budget requests have to go from the bottom to the top, and then when the money comes down from Congress, it gets disaggregated back. So if you don't make the request, you're not going to get the funding. So that's something we could work on with the Forest Service and the staff on the monitoring and reporting, because that's a reporting kind of thing. The idea of the water board, what Bob said about the water board getting involved in this road management planning, we'd love to see that. We're very involved in it with our Forest Watch people. And Forest Service has direction to get to a road system that they can afford and are able to maintain. And that's been deferred. That's called Part A of the road strategy or road process. And it's been deferred, but it's now coming up. So it'd be very timely for the staff to get involved in that. One thing, you know, we'd like to talk more about is these triggers. You know, the BMPs are good when they get on the ground, but you know, all you saw in the order was that BMPs are 80% of the time we're implementing them, and 85 or something like that, I can't remember the exact percentage of the time they're effective. But if you look at each individual area in the reports, you see grazing BMPs. You see, you know, road BMPs. They're in different categories. And if you look in those categories over time, you see that, they're not all 80 and 85%. So what's the trigger? What's the percentage at which, you know, is it 75%, 65%, 80% at which we look at a given activity and say, well, we're not being effective enough of the time here, and what does that trigger? That's the question I still have. So, you know, that's all I got to say. We'll look forward to working with the Forest Service on monitoring and the staff on monitoring and reporting. And again, you know, we think this is a good waiver, and we're glad the lawyers didn't kill it.
Thanks, Felicia. Elisa Noble, and followed by Crystal Bowman.
That was unjust.
Good afternoon, Chairman Hales and members of the board. My name is Elisa Noble, and I'm providing comments on behalf of California Farm Bureau, California Cattlemen's Association, and the California Forestry Association. We represent grazing permittees and timber contractors who successfully manage public lands for both environmental and economic benefits. Let me begin by pointing out that the Forest Service has been complying with the Clean Water Act and the Porter Cologne Act since the passage of these laws through the Forest Service Water Quality Management Plan and associated BMPs. Not only are they complying, but studies have shown that they are largely successfully monitoring and protecting water quality on national forests. The State Board has approved this plan since 1981. Really, some of our main concerns have to do with developing new language where there's a working system that exists, rather the better approach would be to recognize the effectiveness of the Forest Service existing system, make improvements within that system, and merely adopt a waiver requiring the continuance of those practices. We certainly appreciate the regional board staff's efforts to work with us and don't question their intentions. Really, some of our concerns are still with the nature of the language itself and how it could be interpreted down the road. Really, we think it's a bit more broad than it needs to be and still have some of our concerns about the duplicative potential there. So again, we do still have concerns with the policy language as it stands and therefore cannot support it at this time. We specifically describe these concerns in our written comments and would be very interested in discussing them in more detail. Staff responses to those comments were only recently posted. We haven't had a chance to have more dialogue about some of the specifics. Certainly there were some questions there about what areas in the document are you talking about in response to our comments. Certainly the changes to General Provision 12 that are specifically the substantive requirements for contractors and permittees, we would like an opportunity to look at those in more detail since those changes were just made. I would point out three of our overarching key concerns. And the first is that the waiver should only require conditions necessary to comply with Porter Cologne in order to avoid regulatory overlap and conflict. The second is we believe some of the language oversteps the regional board's appropriate regulatory reach in many places throughout the document, specifically with regard to land use, management practices, and pesticide application. The regional board is only authorized to mandate water quality objectives, not the management practices by which those objectives might be achieved. This is especially significant when working in a partnership with a land management agency, such as the Forest Service. And finally, the third is we believe the monitoring and reporting program for this proposed waiver is not necessary to comply with Porter Cologne. More importantly, the Forest Service already conducts both on-the-ground water quality monitoring and effectiveness monitoring of BMPs. Yes, we believe those could be improved. Yes, we believe there should be more of them. That's always a funding restriction and something that we go to Congress asking for money for as well, because that can only help improve management. So I would just close by saying, you know, let me be clear, we do not support degradation of water quality. We work with the Forest Service and our permittees where there are problem areas. We continue to support the best science, research, to improve management practices so that we can have environmental protection and economic viability coexist, which we believe can happen. So again, though, we do have concerns and still and cannot support this today and would very much look forward to the opportunity to discuss this more with staff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ms. Harris.
One of the concerns I spoke with Mr. Clamp about this in briefing that I can kind of foresee coming is that with increased regulation around riparian watering and the desire to create more off-site watering situations, we may run into a catch-22 situation where no one's being told they can't graze, but you can't water your cattle in the creek, and there's no provision with the Forest Service or other ways. Maybe there's not any money to provide off-site watering. And so really it's not going to be, no, you can't graze. It's going to be, there's just no water. So essentially it creates a no grazing situation because you can't have cattle where you can't water them. Do you see what I'm saying? So one of the things that I'm hoping that we can all collectively work together with the Forest Service in the future and then as water quality is a way to provide off-site watering for cattle in those permitting zones, which would provide the cattle with the water they need. It would provide the environment with the utilization of grazing for management for fire and the decrease of encroachment of invasive species. But and it would also keep the cattle out of the riparian zones. But oftentimes you do run into that where, you know, the cattle aren't allowed, should not be in the creeks, but there's no provision to build structures on Forest Service property. So that could be something that we could all collectively work together on in the future, I think.
May I respond to that?
Please.
I guess my biggest point would be we certainly support off-site watering, but we hope you recognize that that's one of many management practices by which we can keep cattle out of waterways during key times. I also would point out that keeping cattle out of waterways at all times isn't necessarily the best ecological scenario. There are key times when we do or don't want them in. And certainly we don't want things overgrazed, et cetera, but they don't need to be out all the time necessarily, and also they help with invasive species and some of those other issues. So I think there's a lot of management practices that can help that situation.
Yes, the flash grazing in riparian areas at times is very, very useful in terms of vegetation management.
Right.
So that wasn't my point. My point was looking for ways to develop off-site watering so that there's management of the cattle in the riparian areas.
And I would just add there are multiple management practices besides just off-site watering that are very good, and we should look into more of those as well.
Yeah, supplementation and herd riding and different things like that. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So, there's lots of ways out there. We just have to find the right one.
Thank you.
Ms. Bowman.
Hello, I'm Crystal Bowman. I'm the Environmental Director for the Quartz Valley Indian Reservation. And Forest Service land, the management of Forest Service land affects tribal ancestral territory of the Quartz Valley Indian Reservation, and Susan also wanted me to mention the Creek Tribe as well. And in general, we support the proposed waiver for non-point source discharges on Forest Service land. And I've been working with the Forest Service and the State Water Board on the revision of their water quality management plan that we feel is quite outdated, with the eventual development of a possible statewide waiver as part of that stakeholder committee. So I guess I'm hoping that this waiver would be updated once the water quality management plan would be updated, since it references the existing plan, which is pretty out of date. All right, here. So we've submitted extensive comments to your staff, and we feel that they were pretty well received. I have two concerns in looking at the response to comments. And one of the things that we were asking for was that quantitative limits for timber harvest, road density, and stream crossings be included in the final waiver. And if you, it's number 4 on the Quartz Valley response to comments, and your staff felt that the forests use various models and criteria, including thresholds of concern, to alert them to the risk of cumulative impacts. However, the inclusion of specific numeric limits on disturbance requires research and ground truthing specific to water quality relationships is unnecessary and beyond the capabilities of the Regional Water Board. And we feel that that may be beyond the scope of what the Forest Service can do as well. Their monitoring program, it would need to be more robust in order to develop these quantitative limits for timber harvest, road density, and stream crossings. And the Forest Service's thresholds of concern are also based on an out-of-date study from the 1970s that only analyzes the effects on peak flows. So we feel this is inadequate and should be reviewed and updated in coordination with the Regional Water Board staff. And then my last comment is just the hope that you can ensure that your staff will work closely through this, the implementation of this waiver. I feel that it's important for their presence to be there, known. I think that's it.
Great. Thank you. That was my last speaker card. Is there anybody else who would like to speak? Okay. Mr. Clamp, do you have anything to add or clarify?
Just a wrap-up. One thing I did want to mention is that the monitoring program is based in large part on monitoring that Forest Service does. So it kind of depends on the forest, but I did want to mention in response to Mr. Felice Pace's comments that some of this is already being done. So the financial hit to the Forest Service is lessened by that. And then just in summary, that kind of from a broad perspective, that what we have here is an oversight framework. And it has substantial and improved regional board staff involvement built into it. We're committed to doing that, to being more involved. We're talking about the inventories on a priority basis, project-level conditions that get review and inspections, riparian requirements for shade, temperature, riparian function, TMDL implementation is required, specifically in the Scott, Shasta, Salmon, and Klamath Rivers, but also the framework overall provides implementation mechanisms for TMDL compliance for all sediment and temperature TMDLs. With that, I would provide the staff recommendation that the board adopt the U.S. Forest Service waiver as proposed.
Thank you. Any other board member comments or questions?
Oh. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Noren.
I do agree with the comment that we, as an agency partner on this, which means implies that we're there. And I would like actually a request that if we had moved to adopt this waiver, which, by the way, Bob, I think is very good, and I want to thank you and your staff. I want to thank the Forest Service. I want to thank the commenters to this. It looks like the comments that were provided were really detailed. It looks like they were well considered. I think it made this a better product. But I would ask that you come back to us, too, on some type of periodic basis, possibly after the first year and every 2 years thereafter, and give us some update on how this is going, how we might actually maybe work to improve it as it goes. It is a big partnership. It covers a huge landmass, and it's a very important program that is being put into play here. And I think you've done a very, very good job. I just would ask that you come back and let us know how it's going on some periodic update. And I would leave that to staff to determine. I'd like to think that, you know, the legs of the stool, that we're one of those legs to come back to and address on some type of periodic basis. And the partnership extends to us as I see it, too. So I want to thank you all again.
I echo that with Mr. Noren. I think that it's a very important thing to come back. And this is, we're talking a enormous quantity of coverage in our region. So having those updates and seeing, you know, how things are working and if and how they can be refined, I think would be great. I think we'd all appreciate that, and we can learn from it. So
thank you. Good suggestion. We will do that.
Okay. With that, Mr. Chair, I would move that we move to adopt or put forth the motion that we move to adopt order number R12010029 for non-point source discharges related to Forest Service management lands.
I would give you a second, Mr. Chair, with all of the amendments that were made.
Thank you.
So noted. Okay. With that, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. I would ask you, Bob, to go back to your slide, but I'm not going to have you do it because I've seen how temperamental this is. But it was a very telling slide that showed, you know, your shaded slide that showed the coverage of just how much area. And now with the passing of this, that we have NPS coverage in over half of our region, I think it's extremely monumental. So I'd like to just congratulate you on that and everybody's help with that. Thank you.
Thank you, and that's true. It wasn't done alone. I have a fantastic staff. The tribes were involved. The Forest Service was involved, all of the commenters.
Well, so we look forward to everybody's continued involvement in that, and we trust they will be. So,
I expect that.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
Bob.
You.
Let's go back and make sure to do a little housekeeping here. Mm. I don't think I do. That takes care of that. That takes care of that. Just a couple of. We'll let the room filter out here.
Can you guys move out?
All right. Just to go through the final formalities here, we do have